Yes.
One of the ladies was asking me the other day about the existence of dinosaurs.
On the existence of dinosaurs. Okay.
And according to 8,400,000 species of life, what's the Vedic angle on dinosaurs?
Well, see, depending upon how the ages are running, then everything is, you know, doubles in each age or is 10 times, depending upon how the arrangements are made. So you have all these interesting reptiles. So you could imagine if something was 4 times what it is now or something, you know, or 100 times or 1,000 times. You know, so a little backyard iguana in the Satyuga would be a dinosaur. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
because they'd say it goes back millions of years, but the point is every 4,300,000 years, the cycle of the Yugas go around. So going back a few million years means it's back in one of the other ages. You know, they just don't tell you about the, how you say, people that they find that are also that big, you know, that they don't talk about. They only talk about the lizards. Is that okay?
Yes.
Maharaj, what's the best way to engage second or third generation youth in Krishna consciousness in the West?
In the West?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, whose perspective are you looking at is West? Because for most, this is East.
Not in India. Youth growing up not in India.
Youth growing up not in India.
Not in India. Who are second generation or third generation devotees living in like countries like New Zealand.
Okay. Rephrased sentence question. Engagement is same as what anybody do. The difference is for the second generation, third generation, is Krishna consciousness is their culture. So it's just a matter of whether they want to follow it or not. But then following it, then they choose whatever positions, you know, social position they want to be in, or their ashram, and then just function from there and be Krishna conscious. The only difference is for the second, third generation, they don't have the problem of trying to figure out, you know, who they are, or like that, really. You know, it's not mad, do we follow this, do we not follow this, that kind of quandary. It just, this is what we do, and then you do it. It's pretty straightforward. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's not, generally it's easier for them. Yeah, of course, no one gives you the credit for it because you're younger, but it's easier. That work? Okay. Something else?
The difference in mindset between surrender and being submissive and then blind following. What's the difference?
Surrender and submission means you know why you're doing it. Blind following, you're doing it just because others are doing it and you kind of want to fit in with them. Does that make sense? That's the point. So devotees are surrendered. The Western culture is blind following. Because no one knows why they should be follow the Western culture. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Say no. Okay. You raised your hand. I don't is that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, someone is saying that it's a biblical definition that you're not encouraged to eat meat. We say we cannot eat meat in order to follow the four principles. So he said, when Krishna said we're not encouraged to eat meat, so we still can eat meat and we can follow Krishna consciousness. So it's very difficult for me to go ahead with the argument?
No, no, but I mean, where does he say you can eat meat? That's the first thing. It's when they say in Bhagavad Gita, this is it, huh?
They say it's not encouraged to eat.
Yeah, yeah, no, but means you're talking here of some variety of Hindu, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So then you say, where? You call their bluff. Where in Gita does he say that? I mean, I don't know. Anybody knows of a verse where... No, nobody knows of a verse where it's only encourage. He's talking about the modes of nature, so you eat these other things, then, you know, you get the results of them. Like that. And so, therefore, then, it, you know, it's not going to work out nice. There's no place where this is he encourages.
Okay, then, how do I continue the conversation and say... By eating meat, it's going to
be... That's the next thing. But the first thing is you stop them from saying in Gita it says this.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. Because it's so many things. See, because most Hindus, when they're 12, maybe they've read Gita, and that's the last, first and last time. And then from there, they just speculate whatever works for them. Right? Because they always have to be, being the good Hindu, they're doing all the things. Yes, we know all these things, yes. But they don't know basically much. They know something, but not so much. So not as much as they claim to know. You know. So first, stop that one. Just you know, instead of wasting our time like that. Right? Because the point is, it's not a matter of how you're going to be Krishna conscious or Krishna. Even if you're saying that, even if Krishna recommends that you don't, how will you be God conscious if you don't follow what Krishna recommends? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, the child, the teenager, okay? He is fully conscious of what the parents are saying, but he'll never do any of it. So is that what they're talking about? So they would call that his ideal? That's the perfection of you know, the family unit and childhood, is that the teenagers, you know everything that the parents have said, but absolutely follow none of it. Right? Isn't that perfection? Yes? So that's the kind of philosophy to professor. You know, a bunch of belligerent teenagers. So if that's what they call God consciousness, okay. But if you actually want to develop love for Krishna, then you generally do what he says. You follow what he recommends. Even if you take that position. But the point is there is no specific recommendation like that. He's talking about the modes of nature, so therefore meat eating is a mode of ignorance. Someone in the mode of ignorance thinks religion is irreligion, irreligion is religion. How is that going to make for God consciousness? You know what I'm saying? So that's what you would say. Like that. People in the mode of ignorance generally tend not to be overly God conscious. Yes. A little louder, please.
Yeah, I was just picking up on that point.
Okay.
But
Christianity can't really be offensive. They can take offense, but it's not really offensive. If they're Jews or Muslims, then you can consider it, because their scriptures really actually deal with it. The Christians, they don't have a culture. You know what I'm saying? So they can't really, they don't have the right to get offended about anything, because they don't. Their culture is pagan Roman culture. Pagan. Pagan means demigod worshiper. You just take out the demigods. What is Christian food?
Well, I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? What's Christian food? Yes, but that's the point. The point is that Judaism follows the rules of the Old Testament, and Islam bases their rules on the Old Testament. Christianity, the New Testament, that basically doesn't have a whole lot to do with, you know, any of the culture. They rejected the culture of Jesus, but trying to keep his philosophy. Jesus was Jewish. Up to Paul, all Christians were Jewish. There were no non-Jew Christians, because Jesus with Krishna. He was teaching it basically a reformation, a devotional reformation of Judaism. Right? Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? So what my point is Christians don't really have, they'll get upset due to attachment to their senses. Jews or Muslims, that's another story. You have to be a little more careful there. My point is Christians don't have the right to get upset because they don't have any basis for anything they do culturally. There is no Christian food or Christian dress or Christian behavior. It's just whatever's the local one that's not offensive to monotheism that they follow. You know what I'm saying?
So appropriate way to convey
that probably you wouldn't. Because they would have to know some theology to actually appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? So the point is why discuss those elements? The point is you have philosophy, you can discuss philosophy. That's the whole point. Right, so the philosophy is what you discuss. Keep it to the point of worship of God, surrender to God, you know, dedicating your life to God, those elements, that kind of stuff. Then you'll find it works well with everybody. Like that. Don't get into that's a detail. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah.
Last night you said that the worst offense is to criticize the movies.
Yeah. And it's of the 10 offenses.
Yeah. And it's also said that the one who praises you is your enemy, and the one who criticizes you is your friend. So how do you reconcile this new conflict?
It means for you he's your friend. For himself, then he's got a problem. You understand? So in other words, if someone criticizes devotees, then it jeopardizes their own spiritual life. But it doesn't mean that it'll have any bad problem with your spiritual life. Right? Because then the criticism, then you see what is there, you know, what to work on or this or that, or even if what they're saying is not correct, but it still, you know, keeps one in a humble state of mind. So then they're a friend.
And how do we offer sincere appreciation of devotee, and how do we accept that appreciation?
Means, what do you mean by the devotee?
I mean, any kind of devotee.
Any kind of devotee. Means according to Rupa Goswami gives, according to their position. Right? It means if they're senior, then you respect, and by hearing their instruction and following it, you know, equals you make friendship with, juniors you're kind to. Like that, that's how. Is that something? Does that work?
Because sometimes when we praise the devotee, it seems they don't believe it. We don't believe that it's true.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Or maybe there's something in our heart that we don't believe we're actually.
That's another thing, but the point is that if they don't believe it, but why do they have to believe it? Because you said it, or, you know what I'm saying? So are you saying it for some social status, or as a opening for a conversation or something, you know? You know what I'm saying? You know, like in the house, you have interesting things around the house to start up conversations, or talk about the weather, so. You know what I'm saying? So if you're saying it, that you mean it, then if they appreciate it or not, that doesn't matter. But if you want them to respond and all that, then it may not work out so good. Mm-hmm. That works or not?
I'm just thinking that we could say Krishna is the ability in man, so when somebody praises us and we say, yeah, it's Krishna's ability, then yeah, we are trying to serve. So
yeah.
That way we also value our own service.
Yeah, but it's not even so much our own service as Krishna's service. We're just taking part in it. You know, it's not about, see, this concept of the self-esteem and this and that, but then what is being esteemed in the modern concept? You know, it's the mind. and what you can do with the senses. It's not about the soul. So for us, it's not a matter of self-esteem, it's a matter of just reality. Right? Because the modern self-esteem is based on, you know, you have it or you don't have it. Not, it's not based necessarily on fact. Right? Because fact is that the soul is the eternal servant of Krishna. So you take part in that activities of Krishna consciousness. Naturally, we get the credit for that. But it's just we're taking part in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yeah. Yes. How do we know if our chanting and we're become purified or it's becoming a mundane activity? But how would chanting Hare Krishna ever become a mundane activity? The name and Krishna are non-different, so Krishna doesn't become mundane. Yeah, but that's different. Do you understand? It's different from mundane. It may be we are not getting as much benefit out of the association because we're not considering the specialness of chanting. Does that make sense? But it never will become mundane. It can't become mundane. Because it's Krishna, so how it'll be impossible for it to be mundane. How do we know we become better? You can ask others. Right? I mean, Gyan and Vairag, this is standard results of devotional service, side benefits. Right? So, do we have more knowledge than before? Do we have more detachment than before? And you can tell if, you know, the development is there. Is that... Yeah. So now again, one should analyze and just see what is the progress, what's developing. Okay. We improve the quality by wanting to. You know what I'm saying? If you want to, then you'll do it. Like anything, you want to improve your cooking, let's say. Unless you have the desire, you won't do it. You know what I'm saying? So any skill you want to develop, you have to have the desire to develop it first. Right? Does that make sense? So the desire to improve the chanting, but why do you want to improve the chanting? You know what I'm saying? You have to have the desire too, but why would you? What would be the reason?
The devotion towards Krishna to taste the higher taste, right?
Okay, but why do you want any of that?
Because I want to serve Krishna. And why? Chanting is one of the ways that we can be in connection with Krishna and we can remember Krishna and like...
But why do you want to serve and remember Krishna and all that?
So that at the point of death I can remember Krishna.
Okay, so why and what will be that benefit? And what's the benefit of going back to Godhead?
Krishna's choice. Krishna will make that choice.
Whether Krishna's making the
back to Godhead or not.
But what's the whole point of Krishna making the choice? Okay, he's in control, but at the same time as he's already said, he only deals with the living entity, how the living entity surrenders. It's not that he whimsically just does whatever he likes. But the 20th quality of Krishna, the 64, is he acts according to scriptures. Right? So then why would that happen? You know what I'm saying? See, you're mentioning benefits, you know, which are all true and are all valuable. but you're talking about how to become inspired, right? But then the problem is you're leaving it up to yourself, that you're inspired or you're not inspired. But there's another method of inspiration that you're still, in all your answers, haven't touched upon. Yeah, no, but I'm saying it's good. It enthuses you to chant, but why be enthused? I mean, this is a process of questioning, a tato brahma vidyasa. So,
to be better devotees of Krishna.
But why be a better devotee of Krishna?
Because
you can
start loving him. To have to cultivate that love.
Okay,
but
and then
yesterday, Maharaj, you said enthusiastic chanting, when you chant enthusiastically, then the end result is love.
Yes.
Prema for Krishna. So,
but in this connection, because you've asked the question about yourself, that was a generic discussion in that particular context. But why would you want to develop that love for Krishna?
Because in this lifetime, there's something that I can do.
Oh, me, so otherwise if you were busy doing something else, like making $1 billion, then you wouldn't bother, because you're already busy, and that, since this lifetime is a bit boring, you know, you've been doing all these things, you know, 8,400,000 species of life, it's getting a little old, so hey, let's try something new, Krishna consciousness, and all that. Anybody can help here?
To please Krishna?
Huh?
To please Krishna.
To please Krishna. You understand? So in other words, developing love for Krishna, going back to Godhead, serving Krishna, all this pleases Krishna. So that's one of the main ways that you're saying, how can I become more enthusiastic about chanting? Because by chanting nicely, it pleases Krishna. Otherwise, you're dependent on simply the benefits you'll get. So if you feel like it, you'll work. If you don't feel like it, you won't. You understand? Just like this. Okay. Let us say, if you're looking at it, that you're cooking something for the family, okay? Now, benefits from that are, you know, if they're, you know, then, you know, it's a nice thing, you do your duties, and then, you know, you get purified, you could say all those kind of things. But is that necessarily what's going to, let's say, you don't feel like, you know, you don't feel so good that you're going to want to cook? Or is it because it pleases the family? And you like seeing the family pleased. You understand? That's what we're making the distinction. All those things that you said are true, but it should be that it pleases Krishna. That's the ultimate point of those points you've made. You know? Is that a thing? Then it's easier to become enthused, because then you're not just trying to, it's not based just upon your own perspective.
Chant in a way that will please Krishna? How do we
that you want to please Krishna?
Yeah.
It's not some technique, it's not like by you hold your breath or turn upside down or jump on one foot. It's rasa means it's based on the mood. So that you want to please Krishna. So how do the acharyas recommend is the proper way of chanting? What do they recommend? Okay, that's time. But seeing that the name can be chanted at any time, place, or circumstance, that will be where you'll be able to focus the most. Yes, you see that. Is something to do with this?
Yeah. So if you're talking to God, you know, it's a very special, private, personal thing. So you don't really want to get to know them, and you're talking to them, you really want to make that attachment. You know?
Yeah.
It's not something that's mundane, it's like a relationship that you're chanting Hare Krishna, it's talking to Krishna, it's God.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's fine. It means the point is that focus is then how you're going to do. Because the point is the name is Krishna. So the more you're aware that it's Krishna, then the more it can be pleasing. Just like if somebody, you invite somebody to your house and don't pay any attention to them, right? How pleased will they be, right? But so if you invite someone, then you pay attention. So you're inviting Krishna by chanting, but then if you don't pay attention, then... Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Whatever will make you pay attention and appreciate the nature of the chanting, then that's what's going to be good. Right? The early morning is recommended because you're not necessarily distracted yet by things during the day. But once things happen, then you can't be distracted, but still, one can still chant. Is something else? Yes.
I manage my question in two parts.
In two parts.
Yes, ma'am. One is that.
Speak more loudly?
Yeah. Is there any way to curb the temptation of criticizing devotees? One.
Curb the temptation.
Yeah.
It's such a good thing, right? The source of real rasa.
So you start getting some rasa.
Yeah.
And second is...
The first things you might try is don't read any more of these tabloids. That might help. You know, because they base their sales on the taste for, you know, finding something fault or something weird in somebody. You understand? What's the advantage of it? Means if you criticize, means you may get some taste from it, but the point is what's the reaction from it? You know what I'm saying?
I'm not clear whether sometimes when we talk about some devotee, is it out of concern for them, for their welfare?
The point is if you're talking about the devotee, can you do anything about it? Are you in the position to do something about it? Yes or no?
Yes, sometimes I can speak to them. And I
okay, but so when you're speaking to them, then it's fine. You're not speaking to them, you're speaking to somebody else, unless it's somebody who is going to speak to them, then other than that, then that's not valuable. You understand? So unless you're doing something about it, what's the meaning of discussing it? Then it's just something to talk about. Does that make sense?
Can I touch the second part?
Why not?
Like some of the devotees with whom I associate, for example, they have not come in this class. I might have temptation of talking to my wife or to another devotee. They should have come. This is most beneficial. And
But is it in the mood of criticizing or in the mood of that it was just a nice thing?
No, I just want them to be here. It is out of that concern.
Are you criticizing or are you just recommending? Just like you, like at the feast, you ate a preparation, it was really nice, you tell others, oh, you should try it, it was really good. You know? You understand? What's the point of saying it? You're saying it because you're trying to encourage them. The point is if you're saying something as criticism. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That works?
Maharaj, you were saying that Christianity doesn't have its own culture. just follow whatever culture is nearby. Some devotees are recommending that Krishna consciousness movement should follow the same system of just basically teaching that chanting, body, you know, and those kind of things. Yeah. But then wear whatever clothes the local people wear and things like that.
What do the local people wear?
Well, like in New Zealand, they wear jeans and bare feet, mostly.
So then, are they wearing jeans and bare feet? The one who's saying that, are they? No. So in other words, their point is, I don't have to wear the Vedic dress, I want to wear whatever I like. It's not about what local people wear. Local people also wear suits. And then if somebody wears a suit, you consider that they're going to be, you know, cultured or gentleman, or it's more formal, or it's, you know, it's very socially acceptable. So if a devotee wants to be socially accepted, then technically he should be wearing a suit. But they're not going to do that either. So it's not about being socially accepted. It's not about being cultured. It's not a. It's about, I want to wear what I want to wear. End of statement. Bus finished. There is no other purpose behind it. It's not that they really care. Because the thing is go and check out the local priest, what he's wearing. He's wearing some weirdo stuff from, you know, like it could be a 1,000-year-old outfit. You know, most of the Christian, at least of the Western Christianity, those outfits were basically kind of established 1,000 years ago. You know, back when they had some power and they had some money. So then they really went out and came up with good stuff. And it stayed like that for 1,000 years. So somehow they can wear the same clothes for 1,000 years and it's not out of fashion. You know, you see the Pope with that funny hat with no top in it. And no one goes, wow, you know, why doesn't he wear something that fits in, you know? You know, like when the Pope came to, you know, Australia, what was it, you know, last year, year before, you know, did he put on one of those hats with the corks on it or something? You know, you know what I'm saying? Put on his blue singlet, you know, got out his tinny. Right? Isn't that what he did? No, he came as he was. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, we're talking about local here, but, you know, the fashions don't come out of here. I mean, sorry to say, I don't want to be anyone to get upset, but generally they come out of Europe. So what's this place got to do with Europe? You know, Italy, it's warm there. There's a sun out, you know. Why would wearing that that comes from Italy, that if you look on the maps, probably about the same range as places in India, why is it that clothes you can wear, even though this climate here has nothing to do with Italy, but the Indian clothes just don't fit the climate? That doesn't quite make sense. You know what I'm saying? So it has nothing to do with logic, has nothing to do with that concern for social. All that the concern is simply about, I like to wear this, and if I just say, I'm kind of attached, I prefer wearing this kind of clothes, you know, so that's what I'm going to do, then people would think socially bad about them. So if you make a little philosophy about it, then it makes you seem like you're, you know, very Krishna conscious, and you can, you know, maintain the facade of the advancement in that particular area. So that's all. It's just a social trick. It has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, and it has nothing to do with the local culture. You just go stand in a bus station, train station, plane station, and just stand there and watch what people wear. The variety is so great. And generally speaking, devotees, when they put on karmic clothes, don't look like any of them. Like that. So, you know, much of the time you can tell the devotee in karmic clothes. Because he looks like a devotee in karmic clothes. You know what I'm saying? It's not good. You know, so those are all the ones that are standing there going, I am an individual. Yeah. That's the point. It sounds good. It sounds, oh yes, it's very, it's philosophical, but it's not. You know what I'm saying? It means the point is according to your position, according to nature, you engage it. You know, the point, it's just like fifth canto. The Kinaras and Kimpurushas, they're talking about, we're forest people, so we're uncultured. But still, the Lord's so kind, he accepts our service. Right? And so everybody's cool with that. Now, if they were saying, you know, hey, what's the thing? Just because we got a horse head on a man's body, you know, what are you looking at? You know, come on, you know, like that, you know. You know what I'm saying? Do they say like that? No. So what's the problem? You're attached? Then, okay, that's what you do. But still, the Lord's kind, and whatever service you can do, you do it. Then there's the topic, if you want to go back to Godhead, that's another topic. Point is, you want to please Krishna, or you just want to please yourself? That's what you're talking about before, Mataji's question. Why just chant Hare Krishna, okay, offer your prasad, and then that's it. But then, what's your goal? What's the end game? You know, you say to go back to Godhead, but why would you think of Krishna? You know, your focus is on fitting into the modern society. Why would you remember Krishna at the time of death? You know what I'm saying? Because that's not your samskara, that's not the practice. Your impression is about just fitting in. So you're always seeing opportunities to fit in, not opportunities to be God conscious. Right? You can say the dress does not make Krishna consciousness. It's true. Just like the Western dress doesn't make Krishna consciousness either. Just as much as a devotee could be wearing devotional clothes and not be Krishna conscious, then the person not wearing devotional clothes cannot be Krishna conscious. So they make it sound like, I can be Krishna conscious not wearing it, the devotee could, so they make it look like it's the other. But the devotee could also be wearing devotional clothes and be Krishna conscious, and that person who's wearing karmic clothes could be not Krishna conscious. But then those aren't brought up. You only bring up The rule of rhetoric is only bring up how much wins your argument. Don't bring more, because by logic you might be actually wrong. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the problem. Those who are using these kind of techniques are using rhetoric. They're not using logic. With logic, they would actually have to connect the dots, and that would take either more thought or more truth than they're willing to deal with. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I think this is related. You can tell me if it's not.
It doesn't matter. This is just open question and answer, so you know it's not related.
The other day you were talking, I think it was yesterday, it seems like last week, but you were talking about the different levels like Anamaya, Panamaya, and things like that, that it's easy to relate to the idea that we have to feed ourselves and, you know, basic sense gratification. And we can get the idea that we are serving Krishna, but then where the two things meet, that's the tricky point. Could you expand a bit more on that? Like, what's required, or what is it that we're missing maybe, or what is it that makes that
difficult
connection work?
Two things, discrimination and detachment, knowledge, jnana, vairag, right? Those are the things, because what is twilight? Yeah, is it day or is it night? It's a junction. So the point is, so what does that mean? It could be classified both ways. So now to classify it one way, let's say it's night, you have to see that the element of, you know, the darkness, the addition of darkness. Or if you want to see it day, is that there's still light. So you have to be able to see both. That's the problem, is that if you want to deal with Dharma, then you have to be able to see both directions. You have to be able to see Dharma, Artha, Kama, but you also have to see Moksha and Bhakti. So that means discrimination. Discrimination is really not popular. Right? Because that means you have to actually practically use your intelligence rather than just parrot. Right? You know what I'm saying? That's generally, people are just comfortable to just go along with what everybody else is doing, because you don't want to be the odd man out. You know? But so, the thing is to be able to discriminate and be able to understand what makes things function. Right? Is just like, let's say people cooperate together so that they all have a better life. So they might cooperate together, You know, but does it actually improve life? Like, just like, I think it was back in 19, I mean, you know, they don't have any facts on this side, but they just saw, these times between, the first 20 years and the last century, at different times, then it was decided that different living entities were a problem to the progress of the, glorious Australian society. You know, so then they would, put a bounty on a particular living entity, different ones, particular kind of eagle or, something else, like that. And then they go out, and within 1 year, they shoot 1 million of them. Now, that took cooperation. There's not that many people there. So to be able to kill 1 million living entities, that took cooperation. And in their mind, they're bettering society. But then now, 100 years later, they're figuring out that was not really so great. Right? So that's why then that middle section, you want to do something and cooperate together to extend society, but who decides what should be the activities you perform to better the society? That's Dharma. That's set by God. Only God can define Dharma, right? So therefore, what duties you're supposed to do, that God says. Otherwise, people come up with all kinds of funny things all the time. They just create their own stuff. And so then, does that make sense? So that's the importance of it, is that, but it takes thought to understand that this is what I'm supposed to do. It takes some detachment to be able to do it because I'm supposed to do it. People nowadays only want to do something because I want to do it. Right? And then they, like your last question, they throw out a smokescreen of seeming intelligence to cover I'm doing something just because I want to. But they make it look like it's intellectual so that everyone goes, ooh, yes. But actually, it's still just anamoy and pranamoy. Don't disturb anybody. That's pranamoy. I want to do this, it's anamoy. But what's the duty? You shouldn't disturb people. Why? Because God says. So therefore, you do what God says to do. And if people are disturbed, what can you do? Right? Does that make sense? We're so worried about disturbing the karmic community that we don't even know, and who even knows if you are disturbing them, but we're willing to disturb the Vaishnav community that we know is being disturbed. Like that. How is that fitting in? How is that possible? So it's not balanced. So intelligence, education, training, that's what's required. Varnashram can't be understood unless there's training. Because it's human life. It's human life. And that's it. If you don't follow Varnashram technique, it's not human life. So it is like the Kinaras and Kimpurushas. It's tribals, but you can be a sophisticated tribal. But, that's all. So human life begins with that. But the point is then, just because human means that now you can connect it to Krishna. Right? So that's the whole point of doing it. Devotees are only interested in it because it's a superior culture to use for Krishna. And since we're offering the results of everything we do to Krishna, the Vedic culture gets the best results. That's why we use it. If it didn't get the best results, we wouldn't use it. So it's not that the culture is what's important. It's that it's the process that gets the best results that we can offer to Krishna that's important. Right? And so, therefore, but the problem is it requires the mode of goodness. So if we're used to a culture that's in passion and ignorance, it's hard to relate to a culture that's based on goodness. So those are the challenges. Humanity, human life, mode of goodness, intelligence, discrimination. Those are the real challenges. It's based on qualities of purification, higher qualities rather than just you feel like it. Right? So that's the challenges. But by chanting, one gets purified, so one could. That's the point is, On the material platform, it probably takes thousands of lifetimes to get to change into something like that. But by chanting Hare Krishna, very quickly one, because it's the most powerful of all activities, purificatory rites. So therefore, you know, in a very short time, one can follow these things. You just have to be aware that they exist. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. You have to know what darkness is, you have to know what light is. But if you want to try to understand Dharma just by knowing darkness, you don't even know what darkness is. Darkness is absence of light. Right? There's always so much worry about bad qualities. Bad qualities are a lack of good qualities. So you get rid of the problem of bad qualities by introducing good qualities. It's like if it's too dark, what do? Right? Turn on the light. So therefore, if someone's behaving badly, what do you want to do? Introduce proper behavior. Right? You understand? That's the real change. You know, giving punishment, giving this and that, that doesn't really do much. That's what sixth canto is all about. Sixth canto is prayaschitta doesn't work, so don't even bother. Right? It's changing changing the character by introducing the positive elements of Krishna consciousness. That will actually change and develop the qualities that you're looking for. Right? By doing nothing, you don't change anything. If the car is pointed in the wrong direction, if it doesn't move, can you change it? Right? The car has to move, then you can turn the wheels and you can turn it around. So the point is, it has to be moving. You can say, no, but it's moving in the wrong direction. No, the point is, it's moving. So now you can change it. When it wasn't moving, you can't do anything. Right? So that's what I consider passions better than ignorance, because there's movement. But passion comes to goodness when the reason you're doing the things is to please the Lord rather than to please yourself. Right? Passion means you're doing the recommended activity for yourself. Goodness means you're doing the recommended activity not for yourself. Pure goodness means you're doing the recommended activity not for yourself and for Krishna. Does that make sense? Does that work?
So, from the point of view of our society, it's not just enough to take that, we just chant and know the kind of high philosophy, but we should actually...
No, but they don't know high philosophy. If they only say just chant, that means they don't know high philosophy.
Right.
They'll claim they know, but they don't know.
Maybe superficially you could say that.
Yeah, superficially. Philosophy, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, of course.
But it requires a process of purification to develop our character through that chanting and through the desire to become a nicer person for Krishna to want to associate with, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's where the culture starts to develop amongst those people.
Yes, yes. Like that. But the point is not about developing the culture. The point is that, as you mentioned there, that key point was that culture means it's then you're in a better position to associate with Krishna. It pleases Krishna. In other words, the 64 qualities is the platform on which Krishna associates with the devotees. Right? Because he has all good qualities, so then naturally then he associates with those who have good qualities. Otherwise, what's the basis of interaction? You know? Just like drunks, they get together. Why? Because then they have common bad qualities. You know, they can relate to each other. Right? You know, so people create
7 o'clock.
Yes, so the point is that's good. So that's the point, is that it's not just a magic thing. I mean, it is magic on one level, but the point is, it's whatever your consciousness now is the consciousness you have. You know what I'm saying? So the idea is therefore develop that consciousness that you'll attract Krishna. Right? In other words, if you have the right consciousness, Krishna would like to associate with you as a person. He's already associating with you as Brahman and Paramatma. Like Paramatma has been in your heart for however long you've been in the material world. So, you know, that's going on. But when we develop those qualities that he would be would like to interact with, then that's Bhagavan. That's what we're trying to do. That's why we're trying to develop them, because it pleases Krishna. But these other things you mentioned before, it's all about ourselves. And even the karmis, here we're talking about karmis, meaning those the followers of the Vedic culture, the fruit of, so they're karmis. The modern society you'd have to actually call vikarmis. They're not technically karmis, because they don't actually know what to do to get a pious result. So they're actually vikarmis. Right? So the karmis then, they are following the Vedic culture because it gets very good material results. But the devotee is not interested in the good material results that you get from following the Vedic culture. He's interested in pleasing Krishna, right? Because it's Krishna's culture. The Vedic culture is Krishna's culture. So the idea is that's introduced into the material world so that people can follow that culture. Just like, let's say, in a prison, you try to introduce norms of regular society, right? So the idea is that if you follow those norms, then you develop the qualities of how you could associate with those outside the prison, right? But then, like you said before, you have prisoners who therefore claim, you know, what's the problem? Why do we have to do all these nice things? Why can't we just be, we're criminals, why can't we just be criminals? You can, if you want to stay. If you want to get out, it's a whole different topic. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Because the soul is full of knowledge, does that mean that when we go back to Godhead, we'll know each other?
We'll know.
We'll be so in love with Krishna, obviously that won't matter, but does that still mean that...
You'll know who you were here?
No, we'll just know, like, oh yeah, that soul was my mother, you know, because she's like a guru in one sense. Obviously we'll know our guru and Prabhupada and things like that, but it's spiritual, but will we know our mother and things like that?
You may. But it's like, that doesn't really matter. Let's say if you're two cowherd boys, what does it matter that in last life that one was the mother? You know what I'm saying? It might be something, you know, humorous for a few moments, but it's not really going to mean much in the past life.
Because it's based on love, like
this,
we just because you have a love for that person who gave you something, you know, gave you Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, but then it's based on the Krishna consciousness, not on them being the mother. Because the mother is just a position of the body. It has nothing to do with the soul. Right? All it is that it's a social position to create interaction. Right? In other words, you have so many souls, so who do you talk to? So you know you can talk to your mother. But still, they're just another soul. But because of the conditioning and that connection between the conditioning, therefore, then that establishes then some root point to develop culture from, because it starts from the mother. Does that make sense? Because from the mother you know who the father is, and then from the mother and father then you know who, you know, the teacher is, the guru is, who Krishna is. Does that make sense? So it has a value in that, but other than that it doesn't have so much value in the eternal pastimes, because your duties are slightly different.
What about with your guru?
Guru, then that goes on, but the particular form in this and that you are is going to be different.
Isn't it that we all want to be gopis though, and manjaris, and serve in that way?
Yes. So then, way? So then, if you're taking it as manjaris, then how do you define manjari?
The little sisters of the gopis.
The little sisters of the gopis. Okay, so little sisters of the gopis. So you have a bunch of little sisters. Does it really matter that one of them was the mother on the mundane world before? You know what I'm saying? What's important is who's the leader, who are you following, and how to be a little sister of the gopis. That's the guru. That's an eternal relationship. That someone was mother in this life, then that's not, it's only this life. In last life it was someone else's mother. Every birth you've had has been a mother. So you have, you know, billions and billions of them. You know. Does that make sense? So that's not so much what's important. You know, it's just like, let's say you're driving down the road with a friend, right? And as you're driving through, you know, some neighborhood, you point out, oh, hey, I used to live in that house. And they'll go, oh, really? Cool. And then you keep driving. And is it ever brought up again? Yeah, so then, you know, you may know that, oh, this one was your mother in last. Oh, okay, cool. You know, that's it. Understand? The guru is teaching you the mood of how to deal, you know, and serve Krishna. So that's eternal. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes.
Excuse me, Maharaj. I was just wondering if you could explain what is meant by Jami Jami Prabhuse, like you're my, the spiritual master is the Lord, birth after birth.
What means? What word don't you understand?
I'm just wondering, because what if you had a spiritual master in the past? Is that the same as if you had and you fell away, say, and come back to Krishna consciousness?
But the point is who is the spiritual master? The spiritual master is representing Krishna. Because Krishna is the spiritual master. So Krishna is always the spiritual master. Now who he comes through, that's another thing. But the technical point is the spiritual master as an individual entity will come back. Right? Is that a problem? If you come back, why can't they come back? Only you can come back? You're special. Because I came back. You know, the advanced souls can't come back. This is our hood. You know, they can't come to our place. You know, like that. Does that make sense?
So is it correct to understand then that if we come back, then the spiritual master that we've accepted, the representative of Krishna, he'll come back to rescue us?
Yes. So that's the point. Don't make him come back. Comforting to know they'll come back, but you shouldn't come back to make them come back. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So Maharaj, how do we not come back? What do we do?
Remember Krishna at the time of death. The point is you're going to remember what's important to you. In other words, time of death means that it's not, you know, you would say your ideal situation, right? So therefore you're going to take shelter of what you consider ideal. So if Krishna's what you consider ideal, you remember Krishna. If it's something else, that's what you remember. You know, if it's your granddaughter, then that's what you'll remember. You know, so in other words, Krishna's prominent. That's why we're trying to make Krishna. That's why this idea of that he was mentioning, some might say, just chant, offer prasad, don't worry about anything else. So that means, okay, that's on the spiritual platform. But then on the material platform, they do that? If someone only chanted and took prasad, we have no complaint. But the point is they're just chanting, taking prasad, and the rest of the day doing all varieties of just ordinary day-to-day mundane stuff. So that's the prominence in the consciousness. So then, if they remember Krishna time, great, perfect. But if they don't, then, you know, another lifetime of more mundane. Right? So let's just remember Krishna time. So what's important to you is what you remember. Can you speak a little louder, please?
Yeah, I'm just curious, but at a different level, maybe at a theoretical level, obviously, like I'm just curious as to how religion as such, or a form of religion, can actually prosper in an environment which is actually determined by the government and laws. Is it important for religion? I mean, in New Zealand, it's a non-secular society, and so therefore we don't actually have a predominant religion. It's freedom of religion. And so many people are just happy going about their lives and, you know,
Okay, but I'm saying, what are we getting to here? What's the...
I'm just trying to say, is that, you know, how can, as members of ISKCON, as devotees, when you're out on the street, distribution box, you're influencing one person, and perhaps there's a ricochet effect onto others. But in terms of a higher level, you know, people in positions of power, for most of society in New Zealand, religion is quite a separate thing. So how would you integrate
it's separate for running the country. It's not necessarily separate in their own personal life.
Well, in some countries where they do have a state religion.
No. You're not understanding. See, running the country means, you know, your job and also the position of authority and power. But then there's your private life, right? See, generally as you move up in society, up into the really high levels, they do have an understanding that there's private life and there's the occupation. Though the occupation, because of the nature of it and the power and the facilities they have, it's very prominent, but they understand the difference. It's only the common person doesn't understand this difference. Right? So therefore the idea that they are not necessarily secular in their own private life, but they may be secular in their occupation because that's just how it functions. Does that make sense? No, but I'm saying, where are we going with this? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Because this is a very broad topic. You need to be very exact here.
I guess because, you know, specifically working in roles which are, you know, policy-driven roles, there's a level of...
Policy?
In policy, you know, at a government...
Policy-driven roles.
Yeah, in a government level. You know, like, there's you've got...
You work in the government?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can actually, you've got the ability to influence what the rest of New Zealand, you know, is going to be like until the next government gets in terms of policies. And so do you find that there's a place for the norms that Krishna consciousness are advocating in those kinds of policies? Because it would make it a lot easier in a sense.
Of course, if the government's God-conscious, makes it easier. But that's why Lord Chaitanya established this Krishna-conscious movement, you know, under a Mohammedan government. So it's not only that it's different from Krishna consciousness; it's actually opposed to. Right. So we're doing quite good. Secular here means you can follow any religion, right? But Lord Chaitanya's was, you know, basically being Mohammedan, that's proper, and if you're doing anything else, it's just tolerated as long as you don't get too, you know, uppity. You understand? But it goes on. You understand? So, in other words, personal practice of Krishna consciousness is not dependent upon the government. It's not dependent upon your situation. The soul is independent from the situation of being Krishna conscious. Now it just makes it easier, but it doesn't. It's not defining it, right? Because if that was the point, why would there be, let's say, you have a state, and then another country comes in and takes over, right? But people still go on, you know, in their own lifestyle and what they want to do. Does that make sense? And if need be, they keep at it long enough until then they have their state. Does that make sense?
To a point.
The point is that if government officials are God-conscious, naturally it'll make things easier. But if they're not, it doesn't matter. We go on practicing Krishna consciousness anyway. That's the point. And when you're on the street, you're dealing with the common person. But the point is who was that government official previously? Right? How many people, you know, in the government are coming from families who are long lines of being in governance? You know, many of them just some guy in the street. I'm thinking it was some time back is that somebody either in this country or Australia, you know, rose to a very big position in the government. But when they were young, they used to come and, you know, take prasad and stuff like that because they didn't have anything. right? And so then they're in the government. So then whoever knew them from that time, then he was, you know, they had nice interaction. I don't know how long back that was, but it was a reality. You know what I'm saying? Professionals have the brains, but then you have to be able to explain the philosophy and that to it. The problem is we don't approach them with brains, so they don't take it seriously. The poor will take it if you can show them, you know, how to do it, and that if you convince them it actually changes your life, right? The rich, they are used to rules and regulations, and they know that you have to follow rules to get anywhere in this social system. They have no problem with Varnashram and our philosophy and the funny lifestyle, like that. Your middle class is always your problem, like that. Because, see, is that it's interesting, because it's taken, the middle class always considers themselves unique. But the term being used, you know, in the general, you know, your journalism is as emerging middle class, right? So what does that mean? That means they weren't there before. It's emerging. So another time, any time that there's peace and there's some prosperity, the middle class emerges. As soon as there's strife, the middle class disappears. Right? You either remain wealthy or you become poor. There is no middle class. Then as soon as there's peace again, then the middle class emerges. Right? The Romans talk about the emerging middle class. Right? That was the problem. Caesar had support with the emerging middle class. Right? So he was a threat. You understand? So the point is your middle class is your tough one. Because they're not poor enough to actually see the need for Krishna consciousness, and they're not rich enough to understand that you have to follow rules and regulations. So they're kind of in between. That's why they can't find the culture. Right? If you go into the higher class, there is culture. You go down into the lower class, they got a culture. Right? I mean, it's just like, let's say, in the richer people, do you respect people or not? You have to. You don't. You don't know the guy, you say the wrong thing, he may be able to destroy you. So you're nice to everybody. Okay? Right? So now, you go down onto the street level. Do you disrespect anybody on the street level? No, he'll shoot you in the head. You know, it's much quicker, much more efficient than the rich guys. Right? You know, that makes sense? The rich guy might take months or years to destroy you, but this guy will just, you know, 3 seconds, you know, you're finished, you know, practical. Right? So the point is these two stratas have no problem with form, structure, rules, acceptance of authority and all that. The middle class are the ones that have some money that they don't really feel they have to. So they're your problem. And the problem is they think they're the world. But they're not the ones running the world. The guys above them are the ones running the world. And they know you have to follow structure. There is no such thing as, like on the higher levels, there's no such thing as running anything with a committee. A committee can meet, but there has to be individuals that they are running it. They have the authority. No structure in the world, successful structure, runs on that. Right? So the poor people will never think of it. The rich people will never think of it. Middle class will think of it. And it doesn't do anything. So it just stays very middle class. You know what I'm saying? It just stays very ho-hum. Nothing special. Right? Isn't it? If you want to do an article... Yeah, if you want to do an article, do it on the rich or the poor. If you do it on the middle class, who cares? You know what I'm saying? Because nothing's happening there. They're just existing. You know, they went out and they bought themselves a new pair of shoes. Ooh, whoopee. Does that make sense? So the whole point is you, as an individual in your position, you try to influence as many people as you can before going back to Godhead. That's what you do. Like that. And the effect on it, don't worry that it has an effect now. Jata Suprita may take lifetimes to build up. And so the person that you talk to now and they immediately clicks about Krishna consciousness and they become interested means in previous lifetime they've been involved and come in contact with Krishna consciousness, but not enough to join. This life they joined. Does that make sense? That's all. So in other words, you just put it out there and then whoever takes it, then good. You do what you can. So don't worry about the rest of them.
And Maharaj, in our personal dealings with devotees, how can we create an atmosphere where devotees will feel safe to go to a deeper level so that we're not always on the false ego platform?
Means if you're trustworthy, then there is that element of trust. The point is means deeper level means there's more confidence. And so if you're confidential, then it can be there. But if they tell you something, the next thing it's on Facebook, then you're not going to have many real friends, right? You know, like that. I mean, they call it friends, but, you know, hey, you know, they call so many things, you know, hey, say. Bosnia, they called it ethnic cleansing also, you know, sounds great. So, you know, so it's you can say anything you want. But the point is that if you don't have that ability of confidence, if you are not a people person, then why will they become close with you? Right? It means relationships are based on what are the common qualities. Right? You have common qualities, you can establish a relationship. If you don't have common qualities, then what will it be based on? Right? You know, if it's just, you know, the footy match or something like that, okay, you can get together down at the pub or, you know, like that, or the game, paint your face, you know, whatever color you want to paint it and get up and yell and scream. Great for a couple of hours. And then the rest of your life, then what are you doing, you know, until the next game? You know what I'm saying? So there has to be something, common qualities. Right? Does that make sense? That'll last. Otherwise, then, if there's some point of commonality, then you can interact based on that, depending on what the depth is. Does that make any sense? Yeah. So in other words, the concept of confidentiality is now considered a bad thing. Why? Because if there's confidentiality, then I don't get to hear all the gossip. Right? And if I can't hear the gossip, I don't feel I'm in control. Because I think gossip is real stuff. And so if I'm not in control, I'm insecure. So therefore, there should be no confidentiality. Everybody's a public figure because that makes me feel secure. Right? That's called anamoy. You know, pranamoy, you accept they're a person, and, you know, they have their position, and they have their life, you have yours. So if there's no confidentiality, you can't actually help anybody. If anyone has any trouble, you can't help them, because if you do, then it's a cover-up. So in such an atmosphere, how does anybody expect there'll be community? At the same time, everybody says community, 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 but it's incongruent. Rupa Goswami lists six different items that create community, right? Taking prasad, offering prasad, taking prasad. Right? So as long as taking prasad is a cool thing, then that's all right. But every time you sit down to take prasad, and oh sugar, oh ghee, oh this, oh that, that's not gonna, you're not gonna create anything. That's not community. Right? That's freaks. Right? So then, you know, so that's two of them out. Okay? The other is revealing your mind confidentially, hearing confidential. Now that you can't do either, because if it doesn't, you know, end up on the computer, then, you know, there's something wrong here. So now four gone. Right? Giving gifts and accepting gifts. Then there's also discussion about, you know, why anybody should have anything. You give gifts, why they should have it. You know, it should be for the community, right? Because there's a shortage mentality. So then, all six gone. Now, at the same time, the same persons will talk community, community, community. That's the problem. Those are the six. You want to have relationships? Those are the six.
And I was wondering when devotees are talking for Shalpa, how can we change that without being rude?
Get up and walk away.
That's rude.
There's always something to do. Bathrooms are there, phone calls to be made, you know, like that. You know, there's always important stuff. You know, there's always.
Yeah.
Or you can just go, hey, you know, I heard this, and then take it off somewhere else. If it goes, great. And if it goes back, then that's when you excuse it.
It's worth a try.
Yeah. Yeah. You make an attempt, and if it does, then great. And if it doesn't, then hey. There's so many more important things to do. Is that what I'm saying?
How do we understand consciousness? And what does it really mean to be fully Krishna conscious?
Consciousness is the symptom of the soul. Because you have life, there's consciousness. Right? Anything alive has consciousness. Right? Like that wall you're leaning on isn't conscious, so therefore it's not alive. Right? So the consciousness being the symptom of the soul, now it's just a matter of what the soul wants to be conscious of. So they want to be conscious of Krishna's energy in connection with Krishna or not. Right? So if it's in connection with Krishna, that's Krishna conscious. If it's not in connection with Krishna conscious, with Krishna, then that's considered material consciousness. Right? Now of Krishna consciousness, now is it favorable to Krishna or not? Kamsa always thought of Krishna, but it wasn't favorable. So that's what Rupa Goswami says, it should be favorable. Right, so then making it favorable, doing things that are recommended, then it's favorable. But now the point is it purely being conscious of Krishna and doing things to please Krishna, is it purely for Krishna's pleasure or not? Therefore he says, free from karma and jnana. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is if you're not conscious, you can't be Krishna conscious. So conscious is good. Right? But then the next step is the quality of consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Like an active person, you can engage them in Krishna consciousness. If you don't engage them, they'll do nonsense, but at least they're active. So you can get a lazy person doesn't want to do material activities, but they also don't want to do spiritual. You understand? So in other words, that positive quality of consciousness is there. People are conscious. Then easy to make them Krishna conscious.
So is it synonymous also to character?
No, consciousness just means what you're aware of. Character is how you'll express that consciousness. Okay?
Yeah. You're talking about confidentiality. Why does Srila Prabhupada name the ninth chapter the most confidential knowledge?
You think that's politically incorrect, or means? No, I mean, what's the context of the question about the context?
I'm just wondering what the meaning of confidential.
Here, confidential. Here, the real confidential is about Krishna, right? Because you look around the world and you see everything there, but you don't actually understand what's behind it. Like the wall holds up the ceiling. But how is it doing that? Because it has that potency of Krishna to be able to do that. Right? The wall keeps you from falling through to the next room. Right? At least these walls. Maybe in Japan you would fall through the wall if you leaned on it. But you know, the point is that potency of Krishna is there. So that's what's confidential. Because you don't see it. Confidential is what you don't see. Right? It's what's behind, the hidden thing. You know, just like, let's say, the celebrity couple in public, they're all nice and smiling, but the confidential point is they've actually filed for divorce. Right? So the hidden. So the point is Krishna is what is actually hidden in everything. So he's actually what's confidential. So if we want to talk confidential stuff, we have tons to talk about. You know what I'm saying? But it's just a matter of what level of confidentiality you want to function at. Does that make sense? Yeah. There's something over here.
That when in the early stages of Krishna consciousness, a lot of young devotees joined. They didn't know about Bhagavad Gita, they didn't know about anything about Krishna, but they saw Srila Prabhupada and they became devotees and gurus now, and they have excelled so wonderfully. So, because they were sincere, can you just elaborate something about sincerity?
We'll get to that. I would like to address the first part of your topic. When Prabhupada arrived, because there was only New York. And I think it was Mukunda Maharaj and Janaki, they went to the West Coast, to San Francisco. They had some connection. When Prabhupada came to San Francisco, there were 50 hippies there. Those hippies knew, I'm not the body, I'm the soul. Krishna's God, right? My natural position is to serve God. That developing love for God is the ultimate goal, and that chanting Hare Krishna is the process by which you can gain that. That's the essence of knowledge, right? These three aspects of Sambandhavide and Prajan, or relationship, process, and result, that is the essence. Everything else expands from these points. Right, so if you ask one of those hippies, what's the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, they could say that. So to say they didn't know the philosophy, no, they know philosophy. Probably there's a good chance that today many devotees know more philosophy, but they don't actually, by volume, but they don't know essentially. If you said, give us the essence of Krishna consciousness in a nutshell, they might try something like, you know, be a vegetarian, offer stuff to Krishna, stuff like that. They wouldn't say these things. So the thing is they knew the philosophy. You know what I'm saying? And nowadays, with that, you know, what he was saying, that some say you only need to chant and, you know, do the minimal possible, and so that's the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. No, that's not. That point is there. They knew that. They understood it. So now you can expand and learn more detail from there. So they knew. Okay? Now, they were convinced of that, so they sincerely tried to apply that in their life, and because they were convinced, they tried to give it to others. The point is devotees preached in those days because they liked it, so they thought, this is nice, they want someone else to like it. Let's say, like, you sit down at a meal, you know, in the family, and you eat something, and it's really tasty, right? And you have some good friends. So what do you try to do? You get them to taste it, right? Why? Because you like it, so that's why preaching went on before. So you like it, you'd like to give it to others. You know it's beneficial. You don't like it, or you don't think it's beneficial, you don't want to give it to anybody else. Does that make sense? Okay.
Okay. Sometimes devotees have this idea that so many people were such advanced and sincere devotees and they had problems or something happened. So how can I expect myself to be successful in spiritual life when this person was way more advanced than me and they had some problems? Is this a beneficial attitude, or is it just takeaway motivation?
The point is, are you going to apply that across the board? How many people have failed in business? How many people joined companies, worked for a long time, and got fired, became redundant? So now are they going, so therefore, what's the use of working, so I won't get a job? And so many people, they've gotten married, the marriages have failed, so therefore, you know, I can't do it either. You know, if Romeo and Juliet couldn't keep it together, how can I? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, what are they going to do? Just sit around and do nothing? So why is it they only target the spiritual life in this example, but nothing else in their material sphere? Everything that they want materially to excel at, somebody's failed at. And some of them, quite good. You know, I mean, it's like Louis XVI, he was running a whole country, one of the most powerful countries in Europe. He lost his head. Now, you could say, wow, you know, but then, you know, he lost his head, so then how can... You know what I'm saying? So the point is you want to find a reason not to be Krishna conscious. There's plenty of them you can always find. If you want to be Krishna conscious, then there's plenty of reasons that you can find. The point is this movement's like a desire tree. Whatever you want, you can get. You want to be Krishna conscious, there are people who are serious about it, and you can get their association, get their inspiration, and you can move forward. Or you can just, you know, blend in. Another face in the crowd, as Prabhupada told Guru Kripa. another face in the crowd. It's up to you. The choice is yours. It's independent. The soul is independent. It has minute independence, and this is your independence. You want to be serious, or do you want to find an excuse not to be serious? Most living entities are not serious, so that's the blending in part. Yes, no? The point is just as someone didn't make it, somebody else is making it. So it's just whichever you want to look at. That make sense? Yes.
Earlier you mentioned about the shortage mentality.
Yes.
Could you speak about scarcity mentality and abundance mentality, how it relates to Krishna consciousness?
Point is, Krishna is not poor, so therefore, if you are working to please Krishna, then whatever is required will come in due time as you have the ability or have the Krishna consciousness. In other words, if you can use it nicely, Krishna will send it. When you'll take the most advantage of it, that's when you'll give it. Right? When does the father give the business to the son? Just any time, or when he will actually be able to take advantage of it? So he could have given it when he was, 18, but he wasn't serious until he was 26. So that's the time. So the point is he may want it from when he's 6, there, but it doesn't matter. So the point is, since opulence is Krishna, therefore, where's the shortage? Krishna's in everything, everywhere, so where's the shortage? But if we look at it, if somebody has something, then unless we get that, we won't have anything. No, you perform the activity that produces it. Like that. Every position has their duties, and duties, dharma always produces artha. People that give their dharma, it produces artha. So if you don't have any artha, good chance you're not doing your dharma. It's simple. Does that make sense? Yeah. But the point is whether you have facility or not, you can still be God conscious. That's the best part about it. The Pandavas, had nothing. They're in the forest. They're still Krishna conscious. They're emperors of the world, they're still Krishna conscious. So the point is if you're saying that because of the situation you can't do, I remember overhearing a conversation where some, devotees who were senior devotees were talking about that, facility and money and that and stuff. And that, they've never been given the opportunity, but then if they had been given the opportunity, let's say they got $100,000, then they could have set something up and done something good and established themselves. Now they wouldn't have any problems and that. And, why isn't that being arranged? Right? They're saying like that. Sounds good. And amongst themselves, everyone's nodding their head. The Prabhupada told the story of a real Vaishya. Right? You know this story?
Is it
about the rat? About the rat. The point is, the guy claimed to be a Vaishya, a businessman, and the older senior said, if you're a real businessman, you go down the street, there's a rat there, a dead rat. And at the time, the government was giving 2 rupees for one dead rat, because the plague was going around, so you get rid of rats, you get rid of the plague. Right? So then he went down, got that rat, got his 2 rupees, invested it, and he became, after time, the richest of all of the members of that family in Calcutta. And that's the family that owned Calcutta. So you're talking real rich, and it started from a 2 rupee rat. Prabhupada said, that's Vaishya. All this, you give $100,000, that's not Vaishya. Right? Those guys, Google and all these other, they started in the garage. They probably didn't even have 10 bucks to rub together, those guys. But they started and then developed. So that's Vaishya. So if you need $100,000 to start up a business, otherwise you can't do anything, that means you're not a Vaishya. Even if you give $100,000, you will lose it. Right? So the point is money is not dependent upon, it's a matter of having the right attitude. Right? She's, Lakshmi is a person. You have the wrong attitude. Why she'll come? Does that make sense? Yeah. What is your ladies say now? 7:45. Okay. So she probably. Well, it depends. What is tonight? Today is Sunday.
Sunday. Today is the disappearance day of Raghunanda, us and Bamsivan.
Okay, cool. Yeah, don't expect a story. Nice try. Nice try. Okay. Is there anything else? No. Yes.
I was wondering, in the association of devotees, there's always many opportunities to perform service. Some situations you find that the service can be almost, you could say, demanded of you, and in other situations you feel that you are willingly wanting to perform the service because of the mood it's been presented, or you know that that devotee, through their own activities, does a lot, and that so you want to assist. And so is there a different? So sometimes it feels like you do it out of duty and so forth. Is there a difference in the purification that takes place in the heart between when you are willingly feeling like you want to do it, or when you do it out of feeling like you should?
Means whether you do it, whether you should or you want to, the point is you're doing it to please Krishna. See, the basis of wanting to do something is based on what should be done. If you want to do something that shouldn't be done, it's not a value. Right? You know what I'm saying? So the point is that the basis is duties anyway. Right? And since one wants to serve Krishna, then on the opportunity, whether it's you want to do it or because it's something that should be done, then either way, the process works. Right? Now, by doing something that you should do, with time, then it also becomes something that you like to do. Does that make sense? So, Vaidhi is the natural, is the basis of rag. Right? Spontaneous devotional service doesn't mean whimsical. Spontaneous means you're so good at the vaidhi that now you don't have to focus on the rules, you can focus on the mood of intent. That's spontaneous. Does that make sense? So both work. Both are good. Okay.
Maharaj, you've been speaking on spiritual principles, and it seems that as soon as mundane emotion enters into areas of your spiritual life, then you know the spiritual principles become clouded. So how can we stay fixed on spiritual principles?
By contemplation. Means the process of education means you hear. Then the second position is you contemplate and practice. Mostly people will contemplate but not practice, or practice and not contemplate. Right? Like your modern intellectuals contemplate but don't practice. You know, and your much of your common person practices but doesn't contemplate. So there may be some basic understanding but not very deep, and there'll never be realization. Right? Realization comes when you contemplate and practice. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. So therefore you do something, and if it works out, great. Then you know, further that. If it doesn't, you contemplate what to do to make it work. Is that what I'm saying? So the idea is if you do that for long enough, then you get realization. And realization will be your value, so therefore you'll do it because you want to do it. Not because you've only heard that it's good. Right? Value comes from practice of, you know, what should be done. Right? It means you can also get a value in something that shouldn't be done, but that's basically kind of a waste of time. You know?
there a most ideal state of mind that we should try to maintain while we're honoring the Lord's prasadam, if we want that activity to be most pleasing to the Lord?
So, most being the important word, so...
Is there a most ideal, I guess, mentality that we should perform that activity in for Krishna's...
But what about eating the most prasad? Is the most ideal consciousness in eating the most prasad to get the most pleasing to Krishna? Yeah? The point is it's Krishna. So the taste, everything like that, that's Krishna. So you're appreciating Krishna. That's the point. Does that make sense? It means the Krishna consciousness, amazingly simple. it's Krishna, just like the holy name. It's Krishna. You appreciate Krishna. Then it works. Right? Because the relationship starts from appreciation. You don't appreciate someone, you won't develop a relationship. Or if you have a relationship and you lose the appreciation, the relationship will break. So appreciation is the basis. Does that make sense? And then from there it builds to whatever degree of closeness or intensity it is. But if it doesn't have appreciation, it doesn't start. So if you don't appreciate prasad, then how will you develop a relationship with Krishna? That's why all these considerations, taking prasad, oh, it's too sweet, it's too rich, it's too spicy, it's too this and that and all this and this for health and that for health, and I read on the internet. So how are you going to develop a relationship with Krishna? No sense. It means it's Krishna. So you like to associate with Krishna? Take. You don't? Don't. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you can do that whether you're eating, you know, the least or the most. It doesn't matter. That makes sense? It would be nice, but you're asking the wrong question, right question to the wrong person. No, it means we're not the story wallow. Others are story wallows. We're technical philosophy wallow. That's why it's a society of devotees like that. So there's plenty of devotees that come through and tell you all kinds of wonderful stories. Like that, right? But the basic principle is coming in contact with the devotees, then they explain Krishna consciousness. It made sense, so therefore we joined. And then when you go to India, when I went to India for the first time, Prabhupada was there at the festival, then you saw him when he would give the Bhagavatam classes. Yeah? It's just, you know, the principle of, you know, he knows what he's talking about. Is that anything important?
It's not Tulsi,
okay. You know what I'm saying? He knows the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, practices it, and so therefore by following that, then we can develop that, right? And so he's able to do that as a person. Right? And so in other words, he's the most natural devotee. Yes, no?
You can reveal what you please to reveal to us.
Yes, that's been accomplished. You know what I'm saying?
You're not so qualified to hear. We don't finish the past times yet.
No, it's a matter of everybody speaks according to their nature. As I mentioned, when the devotees came and spoke Krishna consciousness, it made sense. It was logical. It answered all questions. Right? So that's what we were attracted by. Right? So that's what we do. You understand? Others were attracted to Prabhupada, such a nice person, or this or that, so they're the ones that tell all the nice personal stories. Does that make sense? So everyone's an individual, so they respond differently. Okay. Again, nice try.